This is VOCM News Talk. Call 709-273-5211 or 1-888-590-8626. The views and opinions of this program are not necessarily those of this station. Here's VOCM News Talk host Linda Swain.
And good afternoon, everyone. And Richard Duggan, I like that idea, Storm Talk. With Linda Swain.
That Richard Duggan, he's so clever.
Isn't he, though? That is the velvety tones of
Brian, Linda.
Brian
just in case
Callahan. Joining us off the top of the show. And we're going to talk a little bit about the weather out there. I mean, what is there to say except that I can't see across Kenmount Road. But, Brian, you braved the elements not too long ago to have a little look at your vehicle in the parking lot. Tell us a little bit about it.
Just do that. I had to go get us sustenance in the way of pizza. Don't forget, we had to go on a pizza run. So being the only one with a Jeep in the building, woohoo, I get seconded, right?
Yes, and I tease you about your Jeep and your ability to climb mountains and the like. But
Just like the commercial.
Yeah, it did come in really handy today. So, what's it like out there?
It's wild. I heard Patty this morning describe it as driving on a beach, and it was this morning. Like, it was, it had a soft underlay, but then there was a lot of freezing rain and pellets on top of that, and it kind of made it sandy-like, and literally, even going back and forth, you just couldn't get any stability. And now it's just coming down heavier, so now it's just pure snow, and I put on me rubber boots this morning, and because they're the longest ones I got, they go up to my knees, and still, I went down in a drift just then up by the back of the building, and damn it, the snow got down into my boots, which is, that always sucks. It gets down on your feet, starts to melt, and it's freezing and wet and blah, blah, blah. So I was surprised it was that deep. I just went down and foof, I was underneath it. So, and, it's brutal. It's there's a good bit of wind. It's not the 80 and 90 we saw a few weeks ago around the Valentine's, and the heavier, stronger winds. But this is, it's just so constant, right? And the fact that we still have about another 30 on top of what's down, so we're told, right? And then, God forbid, more on Monday.
More on Monday, and we're going to hear more about that now in just a few minutes. But I have to admit, I was one of the ones who looked out the window this morning and smugly said, is this all we're getting? But of course, that was because of those ice pellets, which are a little more concentrated, I suppose. And you're right. It was just like walking out across the bridge. It was just like walking through sand. You had that same
texture,
feeling, and inability to get a grip, if you know what I'm saying.
Yep.
But now it's pure snow. So if you didn't get at that at those ice pellets earlier, oh man, that's going to be tough to shovel out.
Yeah, and I went at it twice actually, about 6 a.m. and then again around 9 o'clock before I headed in. And so I got a crack at it, but I know when I get from what I've seen accumulate here since I've just been at the office, it's. It's going to be a bit of work when I get back to the house in about an hour. Absolutely. By the way, just, more importantly than any of this, Linda, I just want to let everybody know, Guju is up 1-0, in case anyone's not watching. If you happen to be not near a television, he stole one in the first end of the playoff game, and they're nearing the second end, but I don't know. I haven't seen the end of it yet because I'm talking to you. But anyway, they were up 1-0 so far, only in the second end.
Are we keeping you, Brian?
Yeah, I was watching the game, so, if you don't mind,
No, that's great. No, it's a good update because, of course, there's a lot of people like you and I here today who are working today and probably won't have an opportunity to keep an eye out, even though they are more than interested in what Team Guju is doing right now. So once again, it is...
It's one of those silly storm days is what it is. It's like when you're in school or home, it's just everybody's in a silly mood. So it's lays back. No, it's 1-0, and I think... I don't know. They're just ending the second end. But, this day and age, there are many, many, many ways people can check the score. So I'm sure they already know. I'm not telling them anybody. If anybody's interested, they already know.
Yes, absolutely. And if you want to keep us informed throughout the course of the show, please do.
Sure, I'll come in with updates. End to end.
And thanks for the pizza.
You're welcome. I'm told I'll be reimbursed, so that's all good.
There you go. All right. Brian, thank you.
Welcome.
All righty. And I spoke with Environment Canada meteorologist David Neal over the lunch hour. I checked in with him just a short while ago, and he said, you know what? Nothing's really changed that much since the last time we spoke, except for the amount of accumulations, which is quite a bit higher. So here's our chat from a little bit earlier today. Well, David, we're well into this now. How much has fallen in the metro region?
So right now we've got a couple of observations there that indicate snowfall totals anywhere from 15 to about 25 centimeters that we can see. There are a couple of observations from our automated stations that indicate that some amounts could even be upwards of 30 or more in some parts of metro and parts of the East Coast. So some pretty healthy snowfall amounts so far, and expecting that to continue pretty well through all day today and into tonight.
Now, I know there was an extended period of ice pellets overnight. I know because I heard it. So are we back to snow now, or what's the situation?
Yeah, it looks like now in the metro area it is changed back over to just straight snow. Likely still some ice pellets lingering along parts of the southern shore, but in the metro area it does look like we've pretty much changed right back over to snow. And of course that we're not expecting any more changes in phase over the metro area now. So it's likely just going to be nothing but the fluffy stuff for the next while, that's for sure.
And how much more in terms of accumulation can we expect?
In general, looking still with our warning still mentioning the possibility of upwards of 80, 85 centimeters on the maximum end, we do seem to be on track to reach in that range as we have in the, it's going to be of course variable throughout the region, but anywhere from 55 to 85 in total. So kind of looking at what's fallen so far, probably looking at about an additional 30 to 50 throughout today and into tonight and the early part of Saturday morning as well. So things do seem to be on track to get some of those bigger accumulations as we go through much of the day today.
And it's already starting to dissipate a bit in some other areas?
It does look like at least out in western Newfoundland, starting to see a little bit of clearing out that way, though we didn't necessarily expect too much out there. A few regions through central and well in the southwest, we've ended the warnings there. In central region, still a couple of areas under snowfall warning, but the snowfall rates have really started to ease in parts of central. So expecting those warnings likely to end a little bit later today. So there is some improvement, but just with this track, some of those areas in eastern Newfoundland, particularly the areas under the winter storm warnings, looks like it's going to linger for a little while longer. It should start to gradually ease west to east, basically through the night tonight. But looks like still some lingering snow and blowing snow may just hang around a little bit longer on the Avalon Peninsula into Saturday morning.
So once this system departs, we typically see that Sheila's Brush or a St. Patrick's Day storm. Anything on the horizon?
We're still a ways to go for St. Patrick's Day. We actually have looking after a very brief day or two pause. Looks like we do have another system that's going to make its way towards the island more in the Monday, starting kind of on Monday or late in the day, Monday, and then lingering through first part of the work week. So another storm seems to be on its way towards the island, even in advance of the famous Sheila's Brush. And with that system, it does look like that's going to bring really a mix of snow and rain to the island. Still, in terms of nailing down the exact areas to get the most of either of those quantities of precipitation, obviously still very early in the game, and of course want to make sure people kind of recover from this current storm, and then we'll certainly start looking a little more in depth there. But it does look like a messy mix of snow and rain and some stronger east to southeast winds on its way to the island for the early part of next week.
David, I'd say thank you, but I will reserve judgment for the time being. I really appreciate your time. Thank you.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
So at that time, accumulations were in the 20 to 30 centimeter range, 25 to 30 centimeter range. That's up to about 35 or 40 centimeters by now. And some of the warnings have ended, including the snowfall warning in Gander and Grand Falls, Windsor. That's now over, and they expect, if they haven't already done so, to lift the winter storm warning for the Bay des Pères area. But we're still in the thick of it.
Are we ever? And just in time for our evening commute, Linda?
Yes, as per usual. It's one of those nail biters, although I have to say I was pleasantly surprised leaving the building here yesterday, despite the fact that the snow was already upon most parts of the province that were expecting the snow anyway. Ours didn't start to come, and it was very light, around maybe 6, 6:30-ish. So it was a little bit delayed in the metro region, but hello.
I was one of those people that going around at lunchtime looking for a place to have a coffee. And I only almost got stuck once.
Almost got stuck once. I like it.
I was at the entrance to a coffee shop. That was closed, by the way. But I ended up getting one, and I was really surprised. The worker, really jovial. I'm like, you're open. How come you're open? Big neon sign saying we're open. Said, we only close if it's a state of emergency. I said, well, I wanted to say I love you, but I didn't.
But you meant it. It was there.
I meant it. It was.
There. Right there. So who's more foolish? The fact of the coffee place is open, or the fact that you went out and saw it?
I know. You know, I know it's a little bit foolish of me, but the road I found was fine going around.
Now,
slow.
I said that. But what was the first thing I did on the way into work this morning?
Oh, did you go through a drive-thru and get a coffee, Linda?
I went through a drive-thru.
See? They should be deemed essential workers.
I think they are. Yeah. Anyway, God love them all. And God love the crowd at the pizza place that supplied us with our...
Oh, yes!
Our lunch today,
which there was pizza in the newsroom.
Lovely. Lovely. Back to the roads. The Witless Bay Line equipment has been taken off the road there. As you know, Witless Bay Line is a bad place to be in weather anyway. So the equipment has been taken off the road there, so you cannot drive the Witless Bay Line. They have barriers up in place on either side, so you can't get in there and get stuck, as many people have done in the past.
And not only for yourself, but of course just the emergency crews that would have to go out there, and they could get stuck.
And risk their well-being to help you out, and I'm sure they're happy to do it. Don't get me wrong.
Any of those roads with the open areas, I noticed as well, the most recently where the travel is not recommended is Robert E. Howlett Memorial Drive, and also on the Trans-Canada from Logie Bay Road to Paddy's Pond.
Yeah. I did notice a nice few plows on the go today, which is nice.
Yeah, that's great. I'm getting ahead of it because tomorrow's going to be a big cleanup day.
Big dig. We're getting into the big dig. Well, healthcare, as you know, has dominated discussion in the province since the pandemic. We're going to hear from Tom Osborne, who was on VOCM Open Line with Patty Daly this morning. You're not going to want to miss that if you haven't already heard it. Coming up right after this.
Stay informed and have your say on the news of the day with your VOCM. Join Linda Swain weekday afternoons from 4 to 5 p.m. for an hour of talk and discussion with decision makers and listeners like you. News Talk on your VOCM.
And we are back. Well, as we already pointed out, healthcare has dominated discussion in this province since the pandemic, and I think the province and the country still coming to terms with some of the major shifts and changes that have come to the system as a result. Health Minister Tom Osborne was on VOCM Open Line with Patty Daly this morning addressing a number of important issues within the healthcare system. Here's some of that conversation.
We know that the travel nurse contract has expired out in the Western region, but unbeknownst to the staffing supervisors, when the six nurses were taken off the unit, then lo and behold, the staffers coming in were told you have to work 21 hours a day. So again, about process. Has there been something formalized that people are aware on the ground of what the travel nurse reduction looks like and to prepare for staffing levels in the future? Because we can't be just saying to nurses when they arrive at work, oh, today your 12-hour shift is 21 hours. Is there now going to be a well-understood process?
Well, that, you know, clearly it was unacceptable, and the health authority, I think, did indicate that it was an oversight when the contract had ended out there and the scheduling wasn't properly handled. You know, so these things, when with the health authority, it is a very large operation. That was highly unfortunate that that oversight did take place out there. But yes, proper processes and procedures should be followed to ensure that the proper complement of staff are put in place at any given facility.
Yes, because, I mean, it's one thing to reduce the reliance on travel nurses, quite another for it to be chaotic. Moving on, the integration of the ambulance system is scheduled to take place, I believe, on the 1st of June. There's somewhere in the neighbourhood of 500 private and community paramedics and EMRs that are going to be joining NL Health Services. One question being posed by these paramedics, is the government willing to acknowledge their years of service, so in regarding seniority? Because that would be of concern. You know, if I'm a first or second year paramedic, that's vastly different than someone with 20 years in the business. So will the government acknowledge seniority when the integrated system takes place?
So those discussions are taking place between the department, the health authority, and the various unions. Those are discussions that, you know, it's not an answer that I can give you today until a resolution is found between all parties.
Okay. How many people are at the Comfort Inn, Minister, in the transitional rooms?
So that is not run by the health authority or by my department. I can't provide an answer to that. I can get you an answer, but I can't provide an answer. That operation is not run by my department or the health authority.
No, but of course, but the wraparound services would include people working in public health. So I was just wondering, based on staffing levels, whether or not we knew how many people we were trying to help and treat with these wraparound services, which would be members of your department. But fair enough, I can get the answer from elsewhere. The collaborative care clinics. So my understanding is we've moved the Monday Pond clinics up to Major's Path. Is there a rationale behind that? Because that was a pretty nicely centrally located place for that clinic, given some of the economic concerns in the area, accessibility and mobility, public transportation and the like. So why did the clinic move from Monday Pond Road to Major's Path?
So there are there's an additional family care team going to be provided in the metro region as well. And I believe, you know, part of the plan is to ensure that they are all strategically located based on the visitorship to the family care teams and where the population is drawn from. But there will be another family care team located in the metro region as well.
Okay. When Suzanne Brake retired as the seniors advocate, there was a pilot program called Home First that was in place. She recommended it become permanent, and this deals with a collaborative team for individuals being discharged from hospital sooner. Has that Home First program been made permanent?
The Home First, the program that was put in place 2 or 3 years ago?
That's right.
Yes. So there is government and the health authority are putting plans in place to strengthen that the Home First program. There is funding provided for that, so there will be additional resources there as well, and that is recognized by the health accord as well, and allows for aging in place. So you may have heard Dr. Parfrey speaking to some of the initiatives that are being put in place for seniors and aging. Some of those, for example, and while not directly related to the Home First, but the Centers of Excellence on Seniors and Aging, throughout the province as well. But yes, there will be additional resources for the Home First program. We've been working with the personal care homes to allow things like the adult day program to allow people to stay in the home longer with supports from the personal care homes, for example.
And that was Tom Osborne, Health Minister, speaking with VOCM's Patty Daly this morning on VOCM Open Line. Well, there's been plenty of conversation online in recent days about what appears to be a drop in the number of visits bird lovers have had to their bird feeders this winter. But the story is not all bad. We'll hear from local birder and owner of Bird the Rock, Jared Clark, when we come back on VOCM News Talk right after this.
Your voice in Newfoundland and Labrador's biggest conversation.
If you want to know what's happening in your province, tune in to Open Line every day.
Have your say weekday morning starting at 9 a.m. on Open Line with Patty Daly on your VOCM.
And thank you very much, Richard Duggan and Claudette.
Linda,
do you have a bird feeder?
I am the bird feeder.
Oh.
I know it's controversial, but I can't help it. I mean, they come and they expect it and they wait. They know what time I leave and they just plop down in front of me and like, hello, you're not going into your car to go to work until I have something.
Really?
Yeah.
So what are your favorites then?
The favorite birds?
Yeah.
Oh, it's the crows that I feed.
Ah,
I love them.
They're so smart.
They are so smart. And I wish I remembered everything that was in a long time ago. It was a crow documentary. And I just cannot believe how smart they are. And facial recognition. They know you.
They Amazing. Know you. They know when you're kind to you.
Yes.
When you're kind to them. And they know when you've ticked them off.
Right. Mine left a gift.
Oh, they do that too.
I know. I actually brought it in because the lady here at work, one of our colleagues at work, Veronica, I would go to her for anything like about bird questions because she's just fascinated.
Oh, she is
right?
the bird queen. And what a photographer.
And so I said to her, I said, I found something on my patio, but I don't know. It looks like this like little shiny. Now, we have done renos before, and it looked like a little piece of shiny, say, ceramic tile or something, but it was a little piece that was not just on my rail. And she said, yeah, they leave shiny gifts for you if, you know, you're feeding them a certain way and or they like what you're feeding
Imagine
them,
now so. There's a crow out there flying around doing his crow thing, caw, caw, and sees something and says, you know what? Claudette will like that.
Okay, so that's what I'm telling myself. So I'd like to know, you know, I'm kind of toying with this in my mind. Was it a real gift? I'm hoping that they're going to leave me something else, so it will be like, oh, yeah.
What do you want, like a note? Dear Claudette, this is the crow number four.
Crow number four, this is the best meal I've ever had. Thank you.
Get rid of the such and such, more peanuts, please, or something.
Well,
you know?
It's funny because I think I need to buy peanuts because I put out something.
You'll get the J's.
Ah, oh, okay. So
and then
that's
your neighbors are going to hate you.
Oh, all right. Well, I'll deal with the neighbors. But I know I'm tying up your time, but I just absolutely love talking about this. Oh, gosh. What were we going to say about the crows? The gifts? Now I've lost it.
Yeah. Anyway. That you were wondering if, you know, they're going to bring you something else. You
yeah,
want to know.
Okay, so I thought the better the food, you know, maybe I'll get a really nice gift or something. So I brought...
Are you doing this for your own...
I know.
What?
I'm selfish.
Benefit?
So I opened up a can of already filleted sardines in what, like, the head off, everything. It was just the fillet, and I opened it up and put it out there. They didn't like it. So now I'm floored. I thought they would love me for that, but they turned their beaks up at it.
Well,
so now I have to think of something else.
Well, I thought you were going to say they left you a Mazda or something.
Stop.
You, like many people, get joy out of feeding
yes.
the birds. And there's lots of people who have bird feeders. We don't have a bird feeder. We're kind of close to the downtownish area.
There's
and
a lot of controversy.
We had a bird feeder for a short mm-hmm. period of time, and we said, it's attracting a lot more than just birds.
Right.
So we left that alone for a little while. But anyway. But growing up, we always had a bird feeder in our yard. And as a youngster, myself and my sister used to love sitting in the window, especially in the winter, and, you know, with our little hands on our head, our head or our hands, and watching the birds coming and
it's
going.
It's so fun to watch all of the birds come,
And it was, you know, it was just a little bit of winter entertainment. Mm-hmm. You know, you're stuck in the house and you're watching nature. It's great. But a lot of people I've noticed have been posting to social media and the like saying, you know, where are the birds this winter? So I said, take a look into that. And I contacted Jared Clark, who is an avid birder and owner of Bird the Rock. And he joins me now. Well, Jared, on this miserable old day, I see a lot of people have been taking to Facebook and other forums to, I guess, remark on what they see as a complete lack of birds out there. People putting out their bird feeders, expecting to see a few feathered friends, and they're not at the same numbers they were last year. What's going on?
Yeah, that's right. I've been hearing that a lot too. A lot of folks have been mentioning that they're not seeing many birds at their feeders. And I don't think that's necessarily a reflection that there aren't a lot of birds. What's happening, at least part of what's happening, is that we had a really good cone crop this year. We've had lots of cones in the forest, and the birds are just doing their thing. They're hanging out in the forest and eating all the wild natural food that's available, and they're not bothering to come to our feeders. So, you know, I don't think it's anything to be alarmed about. It's not a bad thing. It's just a little disappointing for those of us who like to see all the birds in our backyard.
For sure. And there was a huge cone crop. I even noticed it myself. Everywhere you went, the trees were absolutely laden.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's right across sort of the east, you know, Newfoundland and you know, well up into Labrador and other parts of Atlantic Canada have all had a good cone crop. So I think it's something that people right across eastern Canada are seeing, or just less birds coming to our feeders.
And we do get a little bit of joy out of that, don't we? What is it about putting out a feeder and watching the visitors that gets so many people interested?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's seeing that little bit of bringing nature to us, you know, seeing a bit of the natural world in our backyard, and that connection to nature, I think, is important to everybody, whether we realize it or not. So when we can look into our backyard and see all these birds flitting around and all the wonderful colors and you know, that sort of confirmation that life is going on out there, it makes a lot of people feel happy, and it's the gateway for a lot of people to sort of get into more general bird watching. Of, you know, you're looking at birds in your backyard, and the next thing you know, you're walking around your neighborhood looking at the birds, and you're going on bird walks, and it really is a great way to reconnect people back to nature.
What kind of a year has it been for those kinds of winter bird walks? Has the weather hampered people in any way?
You know, not too much. Of course, it was really February before any, at least here on the Avalon, before, you know, winter really hit with any vengeance. We didn't have a lot of snow before that. So it hasn't been hard to get around. The trails have been open, and, you know, they're still open if you're into snowshoeing and skiing and those kinds of things, which is a great way to see winter birds. And despite the fact that that we haven't been seeing a lot of birds in our backyards, it's actually been a good winter for birds. I keep track for the province of the number of birds that are spotted during the official winter season, which is December, January, and February. So that just ended, and we actually had the second highest tally on record. We said there were 155 species of birds recorded across Newfoundland, just the island of Newfoundland. So, you know, there are definitely a lot of birds around, a lot of interesting ones. They just might not be coming to our backyards.
So rather than a concern, it actually sounds like a good news story.
It has been, yeah. And like I say, it's nothing to be alarmed about. It's a good thing that the birds are finding all this food out in the wild. That's the way things should be.
Anything unusual so far the winter?
Oh, there's been a number of things. You know, there's been the Steller Sea Eagle, which I think has been on the news, you know, a number of times in the last couple of years. It's a very rare visitor from Asia that's made its way all the way over to Newfoundland and has been sort of hopping around from Newfoundland to New Brunswick and Maine. That was actually seen for the first time in winter this year in the Codroy. Valley for several weeks in a row earlier in the winter. So that was a really, you know, we've been seeing it in the summer for the last couple of years, but to know that it's been here in the winter was pretty exciting. There's been a ruff, which is a shorebird from Europe that's been hanging out at Kitty Vitty. It's probably now the most photographed ruff ever in the world. It's a real star for all the local birders and all the trail walkers at Kitty Vitty. It's been hanging out there, and it's managed to survive the winter, and it's still there as of this week. So, yeah, there's been quite a number of interesting and unusual visitors to the province, along with all the, you know, the excellent and fun regular birds that we have every year.
Have we learned any more about that stellar sea eagle, whether it's a male or a female, and what's causing it to stick around?
No, not really. I mean, we know it's sticking around because you know, the feeding is good. It is a sea eagle. It does feast, you know, primarily, if not completely, on fish. So somewhere like the Cadroy Valley, that really rich estuary there, would make sense as somewhere that it could spend the winter. So it was seen during January. It hasn't been seen for a few weeks now. We don't know where it is at the moment. Maybe it's still there. Maybe it's, you know, maybe it made its way to, it has been wintering in Maine the last few years, but I would not be surprised if it makes its way back to Trinity Bay this summer for the third year in a row.
It really seems to like it here.
It does, yeah. I mean, who doesn't, right? Of course. And, you know, the feeding for an eagle is fabulous here.
And people like you like to see it.
Absolutely, yeah. It was a real star in Trinity Bay this summer. I'm sure there were dozens, if not hundreds, of birders from across Canada and the United States who made special trips to come here and just to see that bird alone. So it not only was it fun to see, I think it was a great little addition to the local tourism economy in that area this summer.
Is it possible now with this 80 plus centimeters we're getting and another storm on the way that we could finally see a few visitors to our feeders?
Yeah, absolutely. When the weather starts to get harsh like this, of course, you know, the birds, and even my backyard feeder, which is often quite quiet, was a little bit busy out there this morning with the birds coming in to get the seed and the suet. So, you know, bad weather will often drive birds to your backyard for a few days. So if you have a backyard feeder, expect to see a little more activity in the next few days. And, you know, there are other things to look out for, too. When we get deep snow like this, at this time of year in the forest, sometimes it drives the local owls out of the forest and into local backyards. So all these, the small owls, the northern saw-whet and the boreal owls, which are resident and live here year round, this is the time of year and the kind of weather where we sometimes get reports of them showing up in backyards. So keep an eye on your apple trees and your backyards to see maybe you'll find a small owl sitting there in the next few days.
I'm sure we'll start seeing the pictures very soon. Jared, really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. It's always a pleasure.
So despite the fact that a lot of people are reporting that they're not seeing a lot of birds at their feeders, there's plenty of birds out there. They're just getting all those natural treats out in the woods and the wilderness. And of course, as he said, I noticed myself the fall that the trees just full of cones. Did you notice that over the past summer and that?
Yep.
Absolutely full of cones. But now with this great big dumping of snow, you might actually start seeing the birds returning to the feeders. So, and the possibility of owls coming. Ooh.
I love that. Now, that would be a highlight of a year if I could see that.
And those little they're so cute.
They are.
What are they? Saw wet owls, he just said. Yeah. So cute. So, yeah, keep your eyes open. You might see a little owl looking for a treat.
Oh, and treats.
They're not going after the food, the seeds, though.
According to Gina,
just saying.
Who called in, crows will not eat fish or anything orange or red. If you're giving them an apple, you have to peel it first.
Is that right? So they can see in color?
I didn't realize that, but she said that this is, you know, she's just took advice over the years from her father, who said, do not put anything orange or red out there. You know, peel those apples because they love how sweet it is, but they'll turn their beaks up at the fish for sure, too.
There you go. So,
Jig's dinner is fine. OK, Okay, do not do this as at home. We're not advising to feed unhealthy things here.
And you were telling me that a coworker, former coworker of ours, who also had a close relationship with a small group of crows, a murder of crows.
Yes.
Used to go out and actually buy dog food for
dog
the crows.
Dog food from the dollar store because they just went wild for them.
Is that
Yeah, I never
right?
knew that.
Wow. Well, so interesting. Have you got names for them?
Well, my stepdaughter calls every crow Joe, so that's what I do.
Joe Crow.
And
hello, Joe Crow.
And so my family, my aunt and uncle for Christmas gave me, there's a store that I love down on Water Street. They have these crows that you can put on their mantles, and mine was named Richie for some reason.
So. Richie Crow. I like it. And have you ever played that game, you know, Raven or Crow?
No, and I find that would be hard.
Yeah, it is a bit tough. You have to sort of, you know, see them in a certain way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like
it's subtle. I feel that the differences are subtle.
They can be, especially if you don't have anything to compare them to.
Right.
But, you know, if you can see that tail.
On a certain.
It's because a crow, I think, has a fan tail and a raven has a wedge tail.
Okay.
But if you've got a crow standing next to a raven,
yeah.
it's like, oh, there it is.
Okay.
So ravens are huge. They're
right.
Way bigger. Way bigger.
Still thinking they're crows, but maybe I did encounter a raven. I didn't realize it at the time.
They also tend to croak and spit. You know, crows are like caw, caw, caw. It's
yep.
a very clear, you know, caw sound. Ravens make this croaking sound. It's like almost like a bullfrog or something. You know, that kind
oh,
of sound.
You have to go on YouTube and I'll find out what you have to search, but there's this lady that mimics the sounds of crows to perfection. And she calls them and they come because she knows the different, she must have really researched it a lot. She can really, like, do the different crows, the calls, and they all mean something different. And she knows it. So she must have really... How
she
do you practice
crow.
It? She speaks crow.
I love it.
It's amazing. You have to look up that YouTube video,
oh,
Linda.
Oh, that's amazing. I'll look it up for sure. So we've got all this snow coming down in the metro region right now. But talking about snow, Kane's Quest.
Oh, the story was beautiful.
It's in the history books
yes.
now. Chair Chris Lacey will join me from Labrador West when we come back right after this. Stay tuned. You're listening to News Talk.
Every Saturday is perfect for a night at the cabin. The Cabin Party with Brian O'Connell. Saturday night starting at 7 p.m. on VOCM.
Well, another Kane's Quest is now in the history books, and by all accounts, it was a roaring success. Chair Chris Lacey joins me now from Labrador West. Well, Chris Lacey, another Kane's Quest in the books, and by all accounts, this was a great one.
Yes, it was. Yeah, this was a very successful Kane's Quest for sure.
So tell us a little bit about the winning team and how that all went down yesterday.
It's a team, winning team, Team 99, Sega Boys Vikings, Randy and Sebastian Malik's father and son team. Randy's been in the race now. I think this is his seventh race. He's a hardcore racer, longtime supporter of Kane's Quest, and he finally got his break this year and made it through with very little to no mechanical troubles. I think he told us he changed one set of carbides and a belt on their machine. So given the conditions and given what we had, they raced a hard race, and they were very lucky with their machines and their equipment held up, and they held up, and it proved to be successful. They had almost a two-hour lead on the second-place team.
But I understand that there was a little episode involving some real, genuine Labradorian hospitality involved here. They may not have had mechanical problems, but they ran into another type of issue.
Yes, and that was on to the last checkpoint in Church of Falls. They were on the way in, and they ran out of gas, and Team 72's Mark Legacy's their support team went and actually gave them gas so they can get into the checkpoint on time. So that just, like you say, goes to show the camaraderie in the race and how everybody steps up and gets together, because at the end of the day, well, first place is nice just seeing people finish and get making those friendships and that stuff going together. That shows what everybody's about in Labrador.
Now, I know you and I chatted last year when the things came to an abrupt end, and I could feel it. I could feel it coming over the phone line. You were pretty disappointed. How are you feeling today?
Excited, a sense of relief, sigh of relief as, you know, weight lifted off your shoulders. To have the race finally finished, you can actually tell it was needed. The amount of hype that's built up, the support that Canes Crest has got over the last couple of years, even within the last couple of weeks to down to the last couple of hours when we had to change the route last minute due to weather again. Everybody came on board to help us out, to make the right decisions, to make the right calls, to get the people in places where we needed them last minute. And it's a huge relief to see such a great event be pulled off. My team, our board, our staff, our volunteers, and everybody come together to make it happen. And boy, did it happen. It was an amazing race. Conditions were great. Weather was favorable. The start and finish line was sunny. You couldn't ask for a better race.
I guess it speaks to the professionalism and the passion involved here.
Yeah, you're not wrong there. The level of passion involved in this race, professionalism, and how everybody comes together. Like I said, we do have a great team here at Canes Crest, between the staff and the board of directors. Our hearts are in Canes Crest, and we want it to survive, and we want it to keep going. And I think it really come through and shined in this race for sure.
So another Canes Crest in the books. What do you do now?
Well, we're climbing this one up and planning for 2026, which is our 20th year. So it's going to be a big one. I'd say you could possibly see some changes in some things. This is the first time we ever had a checkpoint in Labrador West was this race due to the last minute change. And it went off so well that I'd be hard pressed to say we can't make it happen again. So it's going to be an interesting one. I say stay tuned, obviously, because we're not going to let anything out of the bag yet. But I think 2026 is going to be the best year yet. It's a 20-year anniversary, and it's going to be a big one for Canes Crest.
So that's Chris Lacey on Canes Crest, which wrapped up just yesterday with Saga Boys Vikings team number 99 out of Sheshashi winning.
I saw them embrace on the video. I mean, oh, my heart.
You could feel it. I mean,
you could really feel that.
They're living this for, you know, however long it takes to get all over Labrador. Oh my goodness.
And I think he said something like he the father was participating in many. I don't know if it was seven or something. So
yeah,
can you imagine,
they're veterans at it. Yeah.
Yeah, finally just winning. And what I can just imagine what it would have been like as a father and son doing it together and going through the hardships.
What a moment of pride.
And also what really stuck out in that interview too for me was the camaraderie just by, you know, another team helping somebody else. This is, you know, there's a big money pot involved in this.
Yeah.
And they, you know, another team helped them get gasoline and helped them basically win.
Yeah, it's amazing. It speaks to Labrador in a big kind of way. And I don't know if you saw the picture on VOCM.com. It was shared by Peter Panashaway, but Andy Malik, exhausted after all of that and lying down with his cup, pleased as punch. You can see it on his face, the relief. Anyway, well done to all the teams involved in Canes Crest. And, of course, everybody looking forward to another great race in 2026. That's it for us for now. We'll keep you informed of all the goings-on in terms of this storm that we're experiencing. Not supposed to let up until sometime tomorrow, and then another one on the go for Monday. But we'll talk about that then. Do take care. Be careful out there, everyone. If you're going at the snow, do it slowly and carefully. And stay off the roads for the time being. Thanks for everything. Bye-bye for now.